5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. This week, Alyssa Mastromonaco and I talk about whether Barack Obama is right and women are better leaders than men. And we find compelling evidence on both sides. Then Tian Tran, Kieran Deal, and Riri Cheney join me in studio to talk about the creep who smacked the female reporter's butt as she tried to do her job and the ways that standing up for ourselves has benefits and drawbacks. Then, as always, our hills. Do you guys remember how it seemed like Meghan Markle was pregnant for like 6 years? Well, the impeachment trial has been going on for twice as long. So to break up some of the grave but very important monotony, I'm going to call my friend, White House Deputy Chief of Operations under President Barack Obama and the Beyonce of holiday baking, Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Hello.
Hey, Alyssa.
Hi, Erin.
I have two questions for you.
Okay.
First question. You can omit walnuts in most baking recipes, right?
Yes.
Okay. Like it's not...
Right? You can get rid of nuts in anything.
Okay. Because it's not going to mess... I think like pistachio sort of like is its own flavor and omitting it would mess with it. But yeah, I think I agree with you about walnuts. Second question is, do you think women are better leaders than men?
Well, here's what I'm going to say. We haven't had a real chance to prove ourselves in earnest up to this point. But I do think that women by and large are more, empathetic and therefore, you know, like more prone to, 360 leadership. How's that?
360 leadership. Sounds like a skateboarding trick.
Don't get me going with Chloe Kim doing a double flip.
Chloe Kim doing a 360 leadership up there. So the reason I'm asking you, as you know, at an event in Singapore this week, former President Barack Obama, your ex-boss, said that most of the problems in the world come from older generations and specifically men. He said, I'm absolutely confident that for 2 years, if every nation on earth was run by women, you would see a significant improvement across the board on just about everything, living standards and outcomes, which is a provocative thing to say, for sure. But here's the problem I had with that. In 2017, Barack Obama named a book called The Power by Naomi Alderman, one of his best books of the year. Did you ever read The Power?
I did not.
Basically, I mean, I don't want to give it away. If you haven't read it, it's so good. But like the point of it is that it's about a society where women suddenly have the ability to overpower men and the complete flipping of the way that gender like and power works in the world. And like a lot of women are super fucked up with it. So I don't think Barack Obama really took the lessons of The Power to heart, honestly, if he thinks women are better than leaders than men.
But let's be warm that he thinks so much of us.
That is really nice. I mean, Alyssa, you have to take some credit for that. You worked alongside him.
I did. Let's be one of my favorite memories. True story is when he would come down to my office sometimes and be like, what's going on? And I'd be like, nothing. Why are you here? Kind of. And he's like, well, you know, I just haven't seen you in a couple days. And I was like, oh, do you think my feelings are hurt? And he's like, no, it's just that, you know, you're always on your shit. So I don't have to check on you. Like you always have your shit. He didn't say shit. I forget what word he used, but he's like, you always have your shit covered.
I don't think he said
and
poop.
I was like, He didn't say poop. I'm sure he just said like stuff.
Okay.
And you know what? It was true. I did. So like, thank you for the acknowledgement.
Yeah.
But also on Twitter, there was like a real backlash about like what President Obama was saying, being patronizing. And like, I think this is when we have to give people the benefit of the doubt, because I really don't think that Barack Obama was patronizing women, especially given who he's married to. Just mm-hmm. saying.
Yeah. I mean, and also, you know, if you take a look at how things in Washington work, it seems like when women are trying to do stuff, they're able to be the adults in the room. You know, women in the Senate have been able to work together more effectively than men in the Senate on issues like immigration. Women who are members of both parties have helped lead the way. So, I mean, I think he might be onto something, and it makes sense for somebody who was working in Washington to feel like that. But I do want to offer two exhibits that might support and refute this notion that women are better leaders than men. Exhibit A, in support of the notion that women are better leaders than men. Yesterday, Donald Trump sent an absolutely bonkers letter to Nancy Pelosi. It read sort of like somebody huffed paint and then tried to do a Darth Vader impression. Did you read the whole thing, Alyssa?
I mean, let's say I skimmed the whole thing thoroughly, because reading that whole thing would have corrupted my brain.
Yeah. Yeah, I read all three 50 Shades of Grey books for work one time. And at the end of reading all three of them, I remember being like, I'm worse at everything because I read this. I'm worse
yes.
at thinking. I'm worse at talking. I'm probably worse at sex. This made me worse. And it took a couple weeks before I recovered. So you are right to take caution in reading Donald Trump's 6-page screed to Nancy Pelosi. I want to read. Do you want to read a couple of highlights with me, Alyssa?
Oh, please go for it.
Okay.
Tis the season.
Fa la 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 la. There is nothing I would rather do than stop referring to your party as the do-nothing Democrats. Unfortunately, I don't know that you will ever give me a chance to do so.
Oh, okay.
You are offending Americans of faith by continually saying, I pray for the president, when you know this statement is not true. Unless it is meant in a negative sense, it is a terrible thing you are doing, but you will have to live with it, not I. He's like accusing Nancy Pelosi of lying about praying, right?
Yes.
Our deeply weird president, his biggest flaw is that one of his bigger flaws is that he assumes everybody in the world is as deeply weird as he is. Like, just because he fake prays, he assumes that everybody who prays is faking it.
I'm going to be honest. I actually don't think that our deeply weird president thinks about other people at all.
Really?
Yeah, I don't.
I mean,
I think that everything he thinks is related to how he feels. Not really. There's no talk about zero empathy. It's like he's got like negative empathy.
Yeah. I mean, that explains why he's doing these weird impressions of Lisa Page at his rallies, when drawing attention to the fact that she had an extramarital affair, when he literally used illegal campaign funds to pay off women he had extramarital affairs with. It's like complete lack of self-awareness. I mean, here's the thing. I don't want to get too much into the substance of it, because it will melt my brain like a crayon in the backseat of a car. But what do you think his purpose was in writing this?
Oh, this was purely for the Fox News commentators to have something to say last night and today while all this impeachment stuff is going on. They needed a script. He just decided to release it to the world.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, because they were talking about impeachment a lot on Fox, I've heard. I don't watch Fox. again, melting crayon brain in the backseat of a car. I think that he wanted to, like you said, overwrite what they were saying with his own words, as illiterate as they are.
Also, if there's something I've learned from Law & Order SVU, is that writing things down or drawing them can be a form of therapy. So maybe he was also like just giving himself therapy yesterday, trying to convince himself, to continue to convince himself that he is the victim in all of this.
Yeah.
Aaron, he's the victim.
Yeah, just like a member. Wait, he said that the punishment he was getting was worse than the Salem witch trials or something. And it's like, man.
First time he's ever stood up for women.
Yeah,
but stood with women.
Okay, I want to go to Exhibit B, that is a counter argument to Barack Obama saying women are better leaders than men. And that
I'm
is
ready.
The case of a woman who we've talked about before named Lisa Bloom.
Mm-mm.
fuck that lady.
Fuck that lady. See, I want everyone who listens to us to understand that we are, in fact, equal opportunity. Like, we may say fuck that guy a lot, but fuck this lady.
Fuck this lady. Women can be just as big of assholes as men, for sure. Lisa Bloom is a quote unquote struggling following revelations that she helped with Harvey Weinstein's defense. She's trying to kind of cobble together her reputation, get new clients again. She's like, oh, no, I'm a feminist again. I'm standing up for you. But when she was defending Harvey Weinstein, she basically pitched herself by saying, look, Harvey, I understand all these crazy bitches because I work for them. I will use this information to work against them. Is there any coming back for Lisa Bloom?
Sorry, but no. Because you know what? And I heard this. I can't remember if it was on Pod Save America or Love It or Leave It, but or actually just reading the book. But when Ronan Farrow talked about how he was talking to Lisa and she was actually like tipping off Black Cube and all the Weinstein people to what he was working on, that's not just fucking not being a feminist. She was literally trying to help Harvey get away with crimes against women, just crimes. Yeah. Just all the crimes.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like Lisa, I think if you're a professional feminist and you're putting yourself out there like, I'm going to help you, I'm going to stand up for you, and then you breach that trust just once, it's sort of like if you have a shrink who just once releases all their notes from meetings with you just, you know, as a book of essays. I just did it the one time. It's like, no, you don't get to be my
shrink. Just once.
Yeah, you don't get to be my shrink again. Like, you completely broke the trust of, like, the community and of women everywhere, and you don't deserve a second chance.
And you know that I like to say that, you know, it's like, I do feel it. I'm sure you feel it, that, like, if you're a woman with a smidge of influence, you somehow have to do everything as a philanthropy going forward. You should give your advice for free. You should help people for free. Like, everything should be for free. I don't know why, but it is a thing, right? That this is how people sort of view women who have sort of achieved anything. This is not at all what we're saying about Lisa Bloom. What we're saying is that she is a betrayer. And yes, of course, she has the right to make money and be successful. She doesn't have the right to use what she has learned by women relying on her and coming to her. She basically like zapped their brains and then put it in like the form of a bucket to help Harvey. Like, that's a terrible Wonder Twin powers analogy, but like, you know what I'm saying?
Right. I mean, it's despicable. I find it to be grosser in many ways than the men who helped Harvey, because they weren't previously working with women who were victimized by people like Harvey. I do want to add really quick before we get to toasts and roasts, if we have any this week, Harvey Weinstein is doing, I don't know why he's doing this, but he is being public again about himself and his championing of women. Recently, it was revealed by the New York Times that Weinstein and his former studio had reached a $47 million settlement, of which $25 million would compensate the women who chose to participate in the settlement, and the rest go to lawyers, and in exchange, he does not admit any wrongdoing. And it is a bunch of fucking bullshit. But now I think he thinks in his like monster brain that he can go out into the world again and get credit for doing things like making movies with Gwyneth Paltrow in 2003. He said, I feel like the forgotten man. I made more movies directed by women and about women than any filmmaker. And I'm talking about 30 years ago. I'm not talking about now when it's Vogue. I did it first. I pioneered it. What do you think Harvey's game is? And do you think that people will work with him again?
No one's ever going to work for him again because he's going to be in jail. I mean, like, Aaron, what world do you have to have existed in for however many fucking years old he is to wake up one day and think giving that, like, that interview is a good idea? Like, he's going to be, when is he? He's up for trial, like, the first week of January, I think. Does he think that this interview was going to guilt people into feeling sorry for him and that they should give him a break? I'm going to guess that it did the opposite.
Yeah, it sort of reminded me of the audio that was captured by one of the women who helped bring him down. One of the women who recorded him trying to kind of garner sympathy, like, hey, I'm just a guy. I'm just trying my best. It's like, no, dude, fuck off. But I will say, we live on different coasts and in different cities, and we work in different industries. And I will say, I'm not I've had a good experience working in the entertainment industry, but I do know of a lot of people who have not had good experiences. And I know that this industry can be gross and weird and dirty. And if people are still working with Woody Allen, I can imagine if Harvey Weinstein has money, people will still try to work with him because this place has no soul whatsoever.
Oh,
but anyway,
that's sad.
Yeah, it is. It is sad. But I hope he goes to jail. That would be great. That would solve a lot of problems. Okay. Any toast and roast this week?
I have a silly toast.
Okay, good.
The United Kingdom's number one bookseller, Waterstones.
Okay.
Posted on Twitter this week how to wrap a book or a box without actually wasting paper. And you had tweeted it, and I saw it because you tweeted it, and my brain exploded because I am the person in my family in charge of wrapping all the presents.
Uh-huh.
And let me say, it was a revelation to just realize, just turn that book on a 90-degree angle, and you're going to be able to cover all the corners.
Yes. So the orientation of a square present or like gift when you're wrapping it should be diagonal to the squareness of the wrapping paper. I cannot believe that people did not know this.
It took me, I mean, I can't tell you how many hundreds of Christmas presents. Like, I have actually already told my mom I'm coming down to the house on Sunday to wrap all the presents so that I don't get stuck exhausted with a backache on Christmas Eve. That is how many presents I am in charge of wrapping. And, you know, this, I was almost ashamed when I saw your tweet because you're like, I've been doing this since 2000 and I haven't. And I just want other people to know. Okay. That if you didn't know, you don't have to pretend like you didn't see the tweet because you're ashamed. See the tweet, fix your gift wrapping. It's going to change your life. It's changed mine.
Alyssa, let me just add to that though. It's not that I'm some genius. I have had a lot of head injuries. So it's probably, it's probably from like being concussed from like gymnastics and ice skating that I was just like, oh, turn it sideways. I've got synesthesia, whatever. So yeah, that's a good toast. Everybody
that was,
should.
That was my, I just felt it was a practical toast. It was a pay it forward toast.
Yeah. Okay. I have a like mild roast. I think this guy gets roasted not enough, but you know, whatever. I want to roast Mike Pence.
Oh, please.
For sitting here kind of quietly, not acknowledging the fact that if Donald Trump were removed from office, he would become the president, not Hillary Clinton. Like the right wing talking point being like, they're trying to overturn the election. You know, it's like, no, that's not what happened. When a president gets impeached, you don't go back to the election and opposite resulted. But Mike Pence is just sitting there like an Indiana brick, not saying anything. And I hate that guy. I hate
Fuck
that guy.
That guy.
Fuck that guy forever. Okay, Alyssa, this was a great conversation. And I'm excited to talk to you next week. This will be really fun.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Before we get back to the show, a little bit of housekeeping. Guess what, guys? We hit $2 million. Thanks to all of you who stepped up and made over 50,000 donations over the last 4 months, we helped Stacey Abrams and Fair Fight get closer to their goal of having voter protection teams in battleground states across the country next year. As we head into 2020, when we'll all be asked to do more than ever, we also wanted to make sure you understand just how much of an impact you've had. Go to crooked.com/impact to check it out. And thank you from all of us at Crooked. All right, we're back. This is the part of the show where I'm not by myself at a table anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting with three wonderful women who I cannot wait to talk to. We're eating cookies that I made because they are dangerous in my home.
They're rich.
Yeah, and also we have a dog that just eats. Yesterday, I left the house for 10 minutes and I came back and he had pulled down a dozen eggs and eaten two of them whole. So
danger.
Can't leave chocolate at home with this guy. Let me introduce the women that are here to talk about not my dog. First up, she is a comedian and head writer for CBS's Diversity Showcase.
Yeah.
Holy shit, Tien Tran. Welcome and congratulations.
Thank you.
Are you so excited?
Yeah, it's been really fun.
Yeah.
I've been working for it since October and the show is in January. So if you're in LA, you can come watch it.
God.
Yeah.
I want to.
Do we get VIP backstage passes? I love access.
Sure. Why not? Do you really want to see the El Portal?
Absolutely.
I'll show you the backstage of the El Portal.
Yeah, wow. I'll be here. We'll talk offline. I definitely want to come. Up next, she is an actor on NBC's Sunny Side. It's Kieran Deal.
Hello. Oh, hi.
Ooh, that Hello. Was smooth.
I know. Thank you so
that
much.
So beautiful.
Thank you.
So
hi,
opposite
how are
of me.
How are happy holidays. We were talking about attractive women before we started.
You sound like horny Delilah.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. That's my new brand. Going into 2020, baby.
Horny Delilah.
I don't know what that means, but I like it.
You don't know Delilah, the like Midwest radio
DJ? No, first of all, she's from Washington.
I misspoke.
I feel like more of a Terry Gross, personally.
Yeah, that explains why Adam Driver is always storming away from you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? It's also that and the rocks I'm throwing at his head every time I see him.
Yeah, you shouldn't do that. That's assault. Don't throw rocks at Adam Driver. He's a very talented actor.
He's definitely tall.
He is very tall.
Sorry. That just came out too easily. I love him. He's very broad.
And last but not least, you've been hearing her talk, throwing shade at Adam Driver. She is now officially aboard as a member of the recurring Hysteria crew. It's Riri Cheney.
Hi. I love official.
Fish.
Ooh,
you're a fish.
Just be a part of things. Ooh, I'm very excited to be back.
Officially. We do like a cutting ceremony afterwards of our blood, and like it's a spell, but don't worry about it. No, I'll tell you more.
It's from the original text, Divine Secrets of the Yaya Sisterhood, I'm guessing.
Yes.
This is, makes sense.
Yeah, the part of the text that they've had to ban in libraries for children under 10 because it was causing them to do like Children of the Corn shit.
Oh, God.
Is that true?
To be
no.
Edge.
I was like, we'll take pages out of books for that.
There she is. There's my girl. There's my gullible girl. There she is.
That is not true. I showed it just now, but not really.
Guys, I want to talk about something that as soon as I saw this story, I got infuriated, and it's gotten me angrier and angrier the longer that it's unfolded. Now my anger is like a mushroom cloud waiting to be born. Mm. So during a 5K that was happening in Georgia, a Savannah reporter named Alex Bazarjan was trying to do her job, talking into a microphone on camera as runners were running by her. One of those runners smacked her in the butt as she was trying to do her job, which is like shitty. And she took to Twitter to say, "You violated, objectified, and embarrassed me. No woman should ever have to put up with this at work or anywhere. Do better." And social media turned out to be not shitty in this case because people figured out who it was. A 43-year-old, wait for it, youth minister named Tommy Calloway was the one who had smacked her in the behind.
Yep, that tracks.
And his excuse was that he was caught up in the moment.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. He probably didn't expect her to make a big deal out of it on social media, because if he had, he would have been a little bit more sensible. Also, a 5K? You're getting caught up in the moment of a 5K?
This is coming from a marathon runner.
I can run a 5K before I wake up. I can be asleep and run a 5K. You fucking...
All right, we get it,
okay,
Ryan.
We get it.
I'm
sorry.
All right,
oh, you
run.
Oh,
we
you
get
jog,
it. I sprinted once the other day, and I was like... This is it.
No, my point is this guy,
but yes.
This guy's a pussy. Yeah. This guy's a pussy. And like being caught up in the moment of a race that lasts 20 minutes is not an excuse. Like it lasts, it's a 20 minute run, dude.
Well, also like if you watch the video, it was a caught up in the moment because you can see him deciding to do it.
Yeah.
Oh, snap.
Because you kind of see him like,
you see him like behind, like in the like back focus. He comes into focus and his hand has been ready. So it's
there was an intention.
Yeah, there was
it was premeditation. Yeah. It was
because
premeditation.
His first reaction or his first response was, "I was trying to wave," which, my dude, who you waving at? Like, don't ass height children. That also you need to think about your choices.
My smile youth is minister. My butt crack. So.
I mean, it's just it's very frustrating because he's trying to put in the respectability of, look at me, I as this athlete, which we've already established, no. And he was part of the enthusiasm of it all. But no, he saw a shot on a camera. You cannot miss a camera that large.
Yeah.
You knew what you were doing, and you still chose to violate someone. And
I think the thought that comes to my mind is, number one, praise Jesus. that's the first thing. And then number two is, thank you so much, Caroline. when I was in India, somebody did that to me, but smacked my boob while they were on a bicycle. And like—
As a drum?
No, as a drum? Yes. What, were they playing the bongos?
Yeah.
No, Riri, they were not playing
hello.
The fucking bongos. No. It was like, I was waving to an orphan. Because I'm a better person than you.
Yes.
And you.
God damn, right. We didn't know that
we
detail
didn't
before.
Need to know.
But
you
didn't
understand. Yes,
you
really did.
You were going to be like, who's the child? Blah, blah. I know you. You're too curious.
I would never.
And so then, fucking curious, Tien. So then— I'm waving, and while I'm waving, I'm looking away. Guy's coming on a bicycle from the right, comes on the bicycle, and then smacks my boob as he goes. And then I look at him, and I was like, because it's so out of left field. And I look, and he's like turned around and like wobbling on the bicycle, and he blows a kiss at me.
Ugh.
And it was just, I mean, that was also the worst. But number one, at least it wasn't on camera. And
yeah.
Number two, points for originality. You know, like a butt smack.
Is that an at least, though? Because, like, the thing is, this guy is getting his just desserts because he was on camera. And so, like, normally when shit like that happens to us, we just have it happen, and it's just a private shitty thing that happened.
Right.
We sit around a table with each other, and we're like, yeah, a guy bongoed me in the tit, or whatever. Like, it's...
And that's the name of the episode.
Bongoed me in the tit.
Bongoed me in the tit. Tit bongo.
Featuring Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, God. But my point is, like, the point of bringing up this story, and it got me thinking about more stuff, is, like, you know, sometimes the only way for women to, like, get justice in cases like this is to make a huge deal out of it and be public with it. Mm. And, Tien, I wonder if you've also seen, like, justice— distributed through social media, and how you feel about that. How do you feel that that affects the individuals that are seeking the justice?
I mean, with this story in particular, too, it is great that there has been, like, a wave of social media support. Mm-hmm. But she has also talked about how people don't believe her, even though it's on tape.
Ooh, baby.
Even though we all see it. She said that she has received messages from folks who have been like, oh, come on, it was just a friendly pat. And it's like, you're seeing this person, like, be sexually assaulted on screen, and yet I actually read an article after reading ours, because I was like, okay, what's going on with Tom? Where's the youth pastor? What's the deal? Like, is he in jail? Like, what's going on? And there was a defense of him.
Is he in jail?
I know. I was a lot of questions late at night. And someone wrote an article, and this guy starts it off as being like, as a straight cis white man, I shouldn't be able to write an article like this because we've been silenced. But I'm here to tell you that that's not assault. And I'm like, people are like actually having seen it, see it happen live, and they still find ways to discredit what has happened.
But let's really focus on the writing there, Tien, because my God, I mean, Pulitzer. Give this man the Pulitzer. That opening.
It's
that,
so good.
Those opening 10 words.
Well, he's so proud of himself for learning all those words.
He is proud of himself.
Yeah.
And like, that's what's so amazing is they keep moving the line, not to quote Smash, but they keep changing what assault looks like or what a violation looks like, because as he mentioned, white cis men are feeling infringed upon. So they're like, as you take a little bit from my overly abundant privilege, I will take the little bit of recourse you have for your body to be your own.
I know.
And they're the large swings of just our reproductive freedom and also our, like, safety not to be dead. But then they're all the small things like, well, why were you staying on a bridge in the middle of the day doing your job? You should have known.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're so close. Like, you know, there is a sub tweeter that is just saying like, well, she shouldn't have been in those pants.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I feel a part of that has to do with, I always try to remember when I am filled with rage is my default setting, is that the reason it's such a battle is because identity, it feels like, like all of that is like the idea that like I get ownership or onus over another person's body, or like that I get to move through the world in the way that I've been comfortable. If you haven't even noticed it as uncomfortable for other people, you are asking that person to also shift their view of themselves, and that identity shift of like seeing yourself as privileged is painful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That it's that's I think where all of that bumping happens on, yeah. You know, Bongo Titty.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I think part of it was, I think I was watching and I was like, why would he do this? And part of it was like, oh, he thinks it's funny. At yeah. the moment, he thought it was funny. Mm-hmm. And Kieran, what you're saying about identity shift is really like changes what we think of as funny. There's this book called On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous by Ocean Vuong. And it's about this Vietnamese immigrant boy whose mother doesn't speak English. And there's a scene where he's like a little boy and his mom is trying to order oxtail to make soup at this grocery store, and she doesn't
probably
know, and she doesn't know the,
just speaking from experience.
she doesn't know the English word. She doesn't know the word for the animal it comes from, so she like acted like a cow. She put like, you know, horns on her head and she mooed, and then she put her hand on her butt and wagged her tail, and the butcher guys like laughed and they thought it was hilarious, and she was like deeply humiliated that she wasn't able to communicate. And I think that like switching identities and switching your perspective like gives you the ability to see that this isn't fucking funny, but that there are enough people that think it's funny that people still do it. And that is like something that's really upsetting about the whole thing.
To go back to like your original question of, you know, the fallout of like coming out from that or talking about it in public, it's just that so asking folks to like walk in another person's shoes or experience someone else puts people who have been victims of things in the position where they have to share all their trauma. Mm-hmm. And they have to take on all of that emotional labor. For her to do that and speak out is incredible and brave. But then she also, I'm sure, is experiencing like the terrible fallout of the trolls, which is to me like so anxiety inducing that in moments when I'm in positions where I should speak up, I like feel silenced because I don't want to deal with the emotional stress of it.
Mm-hmm. And the interrogation towards your trauma or your response, that like it isn't enough that whether it's someone that knows you or someone that doesn't, you existing isn't enough for you to have feelings about something. Mm-hmm. And so then it is poked and prodded, and then you are made to question whether or not you were valid in being human. And I think that's unfortunately like a space that so many women of color are put in. Like I tell people all the time, I got an email right after the 2016 election from people that I love asking like, what should we do? What are we supposed to do? And I did not know I had it within me to respond, this isn't my problem. Like this is, yes, as Americans and as humans, we all have to be aware, but me describing what you as white women have to do is not going to be my problem today. And I still love them and I will be in their wedding next year, but I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking about the fact that we were talking about like switching sides of things and perspective. What I realized is that this man saw this confident reporter's body as like a vessel for his congratulation. Mm-hmm. That it wasn't enthusiasm or comedy. It was more that like by putting my hands on your body should respond and like, good for you for running this 5K. Mm-hmm. And that's in so many different spaces of like, how dare you pull away in this bar? Because you should be congratulating me for having the courage to violate you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if we don't enthusiastically consent when we didn't have the consent in the first place, it's our fault and we should be ashamed for making another person feel bad.
Mm-hmm. Riri, you watched Succession, right?
I love white men whispering in corridors of power. So I watched the first season and I haven't caught up the second season.
Okay. Well, I'm going to bring up something that happened in season 2, episode 9.
I'm ready for it.
Okay.
Do
you watch Succession?
I watched season 1 of Succession.
Season 2 is so good.
But for me, season 2, I was just like, I don't have the space to watch these characters currently. That's where I was at. I was just like, given everything that's going on in with Trump and impeachment and like what our actual political landscape looks like. I was like, I don't feel like I need to give hours and hours of my time to watching rich people. Oh no, I made me empire. What's going to happen?
Yeah,
to
but it's
empire?
Great because no. The point of the show is you know that something this is not going to end well for any of them. And the point of the show is like tantric Schadenfreude. You wait for it to build up, and then anytime anything bad happens to any of them, you're like, yes.
I will say I've been gearing up to watch season two when I'm at home, stuck at home. Not stuck. I love you, mommy. But at home next week. So I've been rewatching the first season this week just to like really get in the spirit. But I think I agree similarly. There is something, the lens they put on it of these are all horrible white people and there is no one to root for. So it's just like taking bets of what is the most creative way of demise. My mother knows.
Did she hear you?
About you. guys, my mother's calling me right now. She felt it. She is a little psychic. So this is fun. This is so fun.
That's like 8%. Like 8%.
The reason I brought it up is because there's a scene in like the second to the last episode of the season where one of the main female characters, Shiv, Shiv Roy, has to... She tries to convince a woman who is a victim of sexual abuse to not come forward. And the way that she does it is this really insidious, awful way. But her speech that she gives to this woman is like very true. She's like, you'll be famous for what, 2-3 days? And then this will be the first 2 lines of your obituary. It'll be the last line of your obituary. This is what your life is going to be. This is what your children are going to be known for. You want to come forward and accuse us of doing something to you, like, why don't you just keep this quiet? We can help you, blah, 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 blah. It was so heartbreakingly true what happens when women put themselves out there and try to stand up for themselves and for other people that it made me think about these demonstrations that are happening in Chile and now around the world about how, like, yeah, when we're just one woman, we're just Christine Blasey Ford behind a podium. We're just one woman tweeting about this guy and him, what he's doing, not being, acceptable. But if we gather together in big groups and we say the same thing at the same time, we're like, that's not going to be the first line of any of our obituaries. In Chile, this demonstration started where a bunch of women, like scores of them, get together and start doing a kind of like a simultaneous chant. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not, this is your fault. It's like anti-authority, like anti-rape chant. And it has spread as far as Turkey. Earlier this week, MPs in Turkey sang the Chilean song in parliament. Like, this is your fault. Women are being murdered, all this stuff. It's spread all around the world. So none of these women are going to be singled out. Do you think that...
Unless it's just like on each one of their individual graves, these thousands and thousands and thousands of women, it's just like one of those bitches. Just on all of their graves.
Or one mass.
It's called the Las Tesis Protest. And it's a Chilean feminist collective that has a dance that goes with it,
of course.
Is cool.
It's really cool.
Yeah. But participating in something like that also is evocative of trauma. Mm-hmm. So, Kieran, do you think that it's maybe more productive, like, and less like exposing for women to join a collective to stand up for the rights, or do you think it's more effective when women individually stand up?
No, I think you have a point that it's like. The thing that came to mind when you were talking about that was the Louis thing. It's like Louis and his victims. And then it's like you still don't know the names or the comedy of any of those quote unquote victims. Do you know what I'm saying? Which is why so many people, if you're trying to accomplish something or whatever, you wouldn't want to come forward in the midst of that because you don't want it to be your moment of identity defining, life, know, like, because anyone is bigger than whatever's happened outside of them. You know what I mean? Like, an identity is bigger than a defined moment in time, no matter how awful it is or what somebody else projects onto your body, right? And so how do you want that legacy to exist? I think this is a very challenging question. It's because if you don't speak out, then you're creating a world in which things continue to happen. But if you do speak out, there's a tremendous amount of, I think it is a very individual decision, like for each person and like what their kind of cup of stress is able to hold. It's like even the women I spoke to, like in astronomy, and I did all that research on that project about astronomy. It's like the women in STEM who had experienced so much like so many women who had experienced harassment, it's like, yes, there's a lot of like rage and anger and all of those feelings. And they did come together in a collective and they started to affect change. But I, the systemic issue of like who is at the top of any organization, any political movement, any country just has to reflect its population. Mm-hmm. So it just really, it is a, these are top down issues. And it's just like there needs to be a power dynamic shift so that who you're looking at, who's at the top of any organization or any kind of organization of individuals needs to be reflective of women and minorities and like whatever the demographic of that country is, if you want to start to see those real top-down shifts in terms of policy and whatever else, so that the onus is not on the individual.
Yeah.
And then it might be our onus to like demand that change, and that change might come, more through collective action. But this is why I spend a lot of time lying down.
I mean, do you think, like, I think that's a really interesting.
Honestly, yeah, that's how I would have landed that too. So that feels.
Thank you so
that
much.
Was so true.
Yeah. Do you think that, I mean, like you were saying, Kieran, in order to affect change, that we have to make things that feel very private and shameful to us public. Mm-hmm. And does that ever feel like it takes a toll on you? Like Riri, you mentioned before that you're just like, I don't have the energy to like share this private information about myself. Like, do you think that self-preservation and desire to keep things private sometimes means that we don't share?
Well, I think sometimes there's a certain amount of distance you need from an event or from a piece of pain to process it for yourself before you can share it with other people. And due to the speed of horror that's been happening in professional and personal and electronic social spaces, no one wants to give you that time anymore. So whereas I got an email the day after this election that had me literally lost driving to work. I got lost in Hancock Park and I didn't know where I was.
That's an accomplishment. There's not very much to that area.
Oh, no, I don't. I think I was singing Hello by Adele. Shout out Adele. And I snapped out of driving in a, like, what are those called? Cul-de-sacs. Uh-huh. And I was like, where am I? I had no idea. I had to turn the map on in my car to figure out how to get out. So fine. Trauma. But that was like the day after. I didn't know how to respond to that person. And we've had conversations since then. Sometimes it does take a little distance for you to put your body in between the persecutors and those on the receiving end of that type of pain. And like, I think about the things I've kept quiet and the things I've told to the people that are important to me that I know will help them. Mm-hmm. And then I think, is this something that you have to fall on your sword publicly? Like, is it each of our responsibility now with a platform to skewer ourselves and reopen that pain? Like I was thinking when you mentioned Louis, one of, and they would not call themselves victims. One of their victims, his victims, Julia Wolof, had to recently respond again.
Right. There's a lot of there's a lot of the rehash for the women,
and
but not for the men.
Not for the men. He's putting on an ill-fitting suit and he's playing chuckles wherever, you know, and that's was very frustrating to watch because those women were pretty much put out to display on a story that many people had heard for years, and then it hit a fever pitch. And they still have to continue to prove that what happened to them is worthy of being listened to. So it's, I don't know, it's very frustrating, and I'm trying to get to a place where I figure out the things that I need to keep to myself versus the example of being a Black woman who works in entertainment. So there are quite a few stories, and what are the ones that, you know, I feel like I just tell to my friends at brunch versus saying on a microphone, and hopefully they'll help other women around, you know? I don't know.
I mean, has there ever been an instance in your, like, any of your lives where you've shared something and you felt like it's made a difference, where you've seen, like, you've been like, this is a thing that happened to me, and you've seen either a person's attitude change or a circumstance change?
Nothing changes, Eric. I'm just joking. I think everyone's thinking Tien. I think
what
Tien seems like.
No, I was just. It's not like it's more on a small scale. But like when I first started doing sketch comedy at Second City,
my very first cast, I was the only queer person in the cast, and I kept getting written into straight characters, and it really, really pissed me off. And they didn't know. They had never, like, maybe they should have, I don't know. I'm already trying to explain away why they were putting me in that situation. So, like, we've been conditioned to just explain it away. But I did have, like, sit down with everyone and I was like, hey, I understand you guys are writing sketches and doing it quickly already again. But I, like, would really appreciate it if you would put me into, like, a queer relationship or just not have me, like, mention a boyfriend or a husband in this mm-hmm. particular scene, because that's the default for you, but that is not the default for me. And, like, I don't need it to be, like, the crux of the scene. But for me, I love it when it's, like, you know, in a sketch comedy scene that, like, it's just casually mentioned. Mm-hmm. Or, like, if the setup is we're at brunch, like, I'm sitting next to someone who's not a dude. You know, like, even just being paired off into couples that way made me so uncomfortable. Because it was also, like, my first time on stage, so I really wanted to be, like, I want everyone to know I'm gay. Mm-hmm. And they listened, and it was, they, like, were very accommodating, and they were like, oh my gosh, we didn't realize that we were doing that. And I was like, it's cool, just like in the future. Which so it was like a positive experience. But I had been also thinking about it for weeks and like didn't bring it up until the end. Like I just sat in this process of like, I don't want to be a squeaky wheel just because this is comedy. Mm-hmm. And we're just on stage being a straight couple for like 3 minutes. I can handle it, right? You know, like all of the reasons of why I didn't want to be difficult in that situation. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad I did speak up because I would have been sitting in this for like a whole year because that's how long the show runs.
But CBS Diversity Showcase, I did that several years ago when it was the old people who used to run it who were, you know, quite notoriously, you know, made a lot of racist and sexist comments. And again, like...
Great fit for the diversity show. I would say this.
It's like, when you're saying you're qualifying what that other person is doing, there's also like a way in which you're trying to have empathy for where they're coming from.
True.
You know, like if somebody's being like, quote unquote, old school, like I think that their intentions or their hearts were in the right place, but that woman would always just be like, not funny. I remember like, you're not hot enough to have your shirt off. It's not funny. It's not this. And it was really my first experience with comedy and I was starting stand up then. And so many of those people have gone on to be insanely successful. Mm-hmm. But that the collective anger of many years of people going through this process where like these kind of stereotypical sketches were put up where, you know, the Indian guy has to do an Indian accent in his showcase sketch or whatever it is, you know, and it can't be like the version of himself or whatever, led to an article in like the Hollywood Reporter that that had a leadership change. And now look, Tien is one of the head writers on that thing, you know, and there has been a leadership change.
Yeah, and I'm in there being like, you're not hot enough to have your shirt off.
You say that
put
to
it
us.
Back
not
on.
Funny.
Literally every week with CN, we have to cut 10 minutes of her yelling at us for not being hot enough.
I've just been putting my shirt on
funny.
Right now. Feels, now I'm too warm, so I guess that's what's happening.
I mean, I think an interesting other side of that is if you're in a position where you maybe are in a group that is like more represented than the person who's talking to you. Mm-hmm. Like Tien, you said you thought about it for weeks. It was on your mind. Like if somebody's coming to you, they've been practicing it in a mirror.
Yeah.
Like they've been thinking about it. And it's really hard to put yourself out there, especially if you've been conditioned to just be like, go along, get along with the people that are in charge. Like, so I think that, you know, it's really important to register if like somebody who's maybe more disenfranchised than you coming to you with a concern. Mm-hmm. It's like this really matters to them because it takes a ton for them to stand up and to say something. Yeah. And so you at least need to acknowledge that you're hearing them and try to make things better. But yeah, making a stink is sometimes the only way to do it. Being a pain in the ass, as I would call it.
And it's like, it's so crazy too, because we're four women who have somehow found our ways in front of microphones at this point. So there has been this rebellion towards the thing we mostly were taught when we were little. Yeah. Like, they didn't mean it. Mm-hmm. If he pushes you, he likes you. If he calls you wee-wee instead of Riri, don't cry, Riri. You're going to be okay, Riri.
But, oh, no.
Yeah, no, guys, I've really worked through that. It's fine. But it is this I don't know. I feel like I've been on this trail of like, you look back at all of the small slights of not your queerness not being seen or, you know, or being told that your personhood isn't helpful towards your goals. Or like, I remember working at a very top agency and being told this outfit's good, the one yesterday not good, and being like fully looked down by a male colleague. So fun. But I try to use that to like strengthen myself and to help the kids I know now. And I think that's sometimes that's what you can do, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great way of putting it too. Like instead, I've tried to, instead of being like public about certain things, I will try to talk to close folks and or folks who I like would like to, that have come up behind me in Second mm-hmm. City, of just trying to impart like, hey, if there's something that's uncomfortable, you like, you can talk to me, mm-hmm. you yeah. know, like mm-hmm. just giving an opportunity for you to show that you are willing to listen. And also like, you've already gone through it. Or I have personally been like, I've gone through it. I would be willing to talk to someone for you about X, Y, Z, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, as much as I hate to get my brain picked at a coffee, I have,
yeah.
not a big fan, but I do it because mm-hmm. there are so few examples of, like, I luckily know so many Black female writers, but even when I got here 8 years ago, there were so few examples. Mm-hmm. So I take that pretty seriously of, tell me, are you okay? Like yeah. checking in with them. Are you like the girl who replaced me on my desk at an agency? It was like, I can hear in your voice what's happening. Please call me after I have this call with my old boss. Like I don't know, pull people up behind you. Yeah. I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think like starting local is a way to think about it. Also, I think about, you know, the way, like if you're a person who like gives money to organizations, like if you give to a small organization, your money goes a long way. Like if you're a person who has something valuable to give, and that is like advice, support, insight, and you give it to like a person that it'll mean a lot to, it like goes further. Mm-hmm. I think that's an interesting way of thinking about it. And getting your brain picked is definitely not fun.
Not fun.
There's like collective spaces where shared experience can be very cathartic mm-hmm. and it can make you feel less crazy. Mm-hmm. And then there's kind of outside of that shared experience, then there might be how you deal with something in a professional workplace or how you deal with something in a personal relationship or in a friend group. I don't know if I would fault someone for not speaking out about moments in their life, because like mm-hmm. you said, there's so much, like this is a very systemically racist and sexist business. Do you know what I mean? Like there's just so much systemic racism and sexism. It's like, if you were going to like list all of the examples, it's like, you're just going to wallow. So the other big thing I think is like, it's like that film that I wrote a year ago that I was talking to John, like that is a thriller about harassment. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how can you also be undeniable and get very, very good at something yeah. and like, mm-hmm. and like put it into a form that maybe isn't Twitter. It doesn't have to be your personal, like this happened to me. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like there is also like a container of stand up and yeah. film and art and like mm-hmm. things that can, I think, be more collectively and culturally cathartic. And I mm-hmm. find that to be a very like healing gesture. And getting something like that made is such an uphill battle. Mm-hmm. Like even when you have a ton of support, even when people are getting it out and there's great producers, and that's for any piece of anything. But mm-hmm. I think that also like I have a very steel will because of that. I look at it as like the narrative gesture of everyone's job is to do your best. As long as you are doing your best to push the narrative forward so it's going to be better for the people after you, mm-hmm. everyone, like there was an entire civil rights movement where everyone is not Rosa Parks mm-hmm. and where like you do not know everyone's name who was a part of that.
Right,
and
right.
it's like your job is to like do your best and do your own best work to push it forward for the next generation of women and POC women and, you know, people who need representation after you, mm-hmm. you know, and wherever you fall in that narrative gesture, tight, you know, yeah. we're all going to die.
I mean, and to
you've been landing them really,
really. Thank you so much. Yeah. You're like the Simone.
Wow, you're getting ready for the Summer Olympics. Yeah,
you're like the Simone Biles of just sticking the landing.
Thank you so much.
We're going to name a bunch of moves the Kieran because you're the first one to land them in competition.
I'm like, like a piece of trying to the things I tell myself, and then I'm like, I'm so tired.
It's every, but that is the, that is, but you keep moving.
Yeah.
Like that's every day. It's like, all I want to do is take a nap at 4:30 p.m. and then I got up and did work and I'm proud of myself, and that's what you're doing. And we all need affirmations. I think support's really important, but yeah, we're all going to die. It's okay.
I mean, and to bring it back to the reporter who spoke up, I think that like the fact that, I guess, ending it on a high note, the fact that social media immediately went after him mm-hmm. is a testament to the fact that we have come a certain distance. Not yeah. not as far as I would like to have come.
We've
but
gone the, 5K.
Yes, we've gone.
The 5K of progress. Yeah.
We've gone 5K. But we're not there
Thank
yet.
Thank you.
Slow clap. All right, we got to take a break.
Tien's just leaving now. She's walking out of the studio.
She dropped her microphone. Yes. She wasn't holding it. She threw it on the ground.
Oh, good. I can take my shirt off.
Put your shirt on.
And the other thing is change is genuinely inevitable. Like it's yeah. even, I mean, one of the things I remind myself is even in Trump's administration, there are more women and minorities in Congress mm-hmm. today.
Uh-huh.
It's in, yeah. it's actually inevitable. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you win in our lifetime in the way that I would like to win in our lifetime, but I know that it's coming and it is coming and it's happening, and you can see it in the shift in entertainment. You can see it everywhere.
Right. Well, so, that's why they're so scared, because we're coming and there's no stopping us. And we have to take a break though. When we're back, The Hills Will Die On. And we're back. We're at the part of the show where we get extremely petty, because in the normal part of the show, we're not petty at all. It's The Hills We'll Die On. Let's get started with our listener hill.
Hi, Hysteria, longtime listener, first time caller. My name's Susie, and the hill that I will die on is that Christmas albums released by current artists who are reimagining old classics are not good. I don't understand why this keeps happening. Every year, one or two artists lose their minds and they decide, I'm going to redo Jingle Bells and the Christmas song. And it's like, your version is never going to be better than the original. Why do we keep trying this? Like, if you're going to release Christmas music, can you at least release an original song, like pull Mariah Carey? Hope someone agrees with me. Thanks.
I like that so much.
I love this.
Yeah, that was.
Hope someone
that
agrees
was
so, with me. That was, I think so sweet.
So vulnerable.
I loved
I just
it.
Love that she's like, someone pull a Mariah Carey, girl. We all wish we could.
I know.
We
all want to write a hit.
I would love to write the best Christmas song in the world in 90 minutes totes is how long she took to write that.
What? At like 22 and just be like, whatever.
And then as soon as it hits like December 15th, it's the number one song. It's already good
for her.
Last 3 decades.
Yeah.
Good for her.
It's the best.
But yes, you're right. They're all trash.
They are all trash.
I've got a Christmas-related hill to die on. Mm. Recently, I tuned into a great performances of The Nutcracker, and it was Act One.
Wait, you said you tuned. I'm sorry. You said you tuned into a great performance?
A great performances. It's a PBS show.
It's a PBS show where
it shows boring art that when I was little, I was like, this is dumb. And as an adult, I'm like, this is good background stuff. Yeah. Okay. So I tuned into The Nutcracker and it was Act One. And I had forgotten how fucking weird The Nutcracker is. Mm. Act One is there all these kids are dancing around and their parents are having a party and they have a weird old toy maker who is clearly a pedophile show up and like flirt with a little girl, gives her a doll that she falls in love with who is a nutcracking doll, which, I mean, I aspire to have to nut crack nuts, but not in that way.
Aaron Nutcracker Ryan.
But she, okay, anyone? So she gets the doll. The whole thing is very boring because they keep doing these things. Yes. They're like, now we're going in a circle. Now we're not in a circle. We're in a circle again. Look at the tree. It's so fucking boring. And then everybody does acid, apparently, because mm-hmm. the nutcracker becomes real. The mice become real. She goes to a land, and the whole, like, acid trip part makes no sense. It's dumb and racist. And then at the very end, she flies away in a sleigh, like at the end of Grease. It is so weird. It is so weird. Kids should not watch it. We should not be performing it anymore. I hate the nutcracker.
Yes, and you're completely correct. And what's so bananas is that, parents use it as, like, a litmus litmus test of whether or not you're a good kid if you can put on a taffeta dress and sit in like the Baltimore Opera House and just like watch it for 5 hours. It's too damn long. Yeah. And they all should just calm down. Why do you want me to watch people rolling and mice coming to life? Like, free me from these chains. I agree with you, honestly.
It's really so bad and weird. There's other things that are better. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, my mom took me to see a performance at the, I believe, the Guthrie Theater of Black Nativity, where it was like all like Black Christmas.
Hell yeah.
And it was the best Christmas experience of my life.
Like a Black Thanksgiving. That sounds right.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was like, go tell it on the mountain. And then they did like the Christmas story, but they had like an entirely Black cast. And it was like, my mind is blown. Like, this is amazing. The Nutcracker is weird and bad.
My niece and nephew are going to that this year.
Well, they're going to be bored and hate it.
So bored.
I know. I don't have to go. I'm not going. Well,
you're like, I'm grown.
I don't have to go. I have to take them. No.
Okay. Who wants to go next? Kieran, you want to go next?
I have a Christmas-related hill. Despite my heathen status. In my family, we did celebrate trees on Christmas. Where are the mistletoes and why aren't there hot men standing underneath them? Oh, I don't understand. First of all, I've never seen one in real life. And there's never someone handsome standing under the non-existent fucking herb. Is it an herb?
It's not a spice.
No, you can't stuff a chicken with it.
Yeah, you can't marinate a pork with it.
Well, not if you don't believe, Tien.
It's poison. Okay. You would be poisoned.
Which is what heterosexuality is.
Oh my God. Okay. Yes!
Whoever you want standing under the mistletoe, I don't know. I haven't seen them at parties ever. And I've never seen someone attractive standing under one because I've never seen the actual plant anywhere. And I am sad about that. It seems like I know, because we talked all about like trauma and harassy, like that it's like harassy. It's not the best, maybe.
This is your nostalgia.
Yeah. I love Baby It's Cold Outside. That song is amazing.
Speaking of songs that were just redone as our like call-in with the John Legend and Kelly Clarkson, they like put woke lyrics in it. Mm. And I'm like, I'm all for Kelly. Like, she is a white queen, but I still need it.
Like, dude, it's not a Christmas song. It's a cold weather song. It has nothing to do with Christmas. Literally, find a Christmas-related lyric in that song. It's not a Christmas song, so let's kill the debate entirely.
I just feel like I've just been sold a false narrative with the mistletoe. Okay, I guess it's like a rom-com. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, life doesn't look like that, and it's like I feel like I see movies, and then the mistletoe, and it like seems like a dope idea, but in reality, that would probably be assault, and it's like, you know, all the things. And I just
I also can see you. Sweet you, just like finally having that experience and then being like, I can see you getting like under the mistletoe, hot dude, it's perfect. And you're like, well,
did nothing for me.
I was like, why did you eat garlic before this? Nothing's ever right. Yeah. Oh, bah humbug.
Nothing is ever right. That's true. Okay. Tien, do you want to go next?
Damn it. Now I have to have a Christmas.
I came up with one.
Did you, go? Okay, Riri, go.
So Love Actually has been one of my favorite movies since I was a young child. It moves. It shakes. It's a mover. It's a shaker.
Talk about heterosexual poison.
Yes. The Hill I'll Die On is that Love Actually isn't so much a Christmas movie as it is an ode to loneliness and fear. I just came up with this just now, but I'm going to really work through it. Yeah. I think the most evocative story in this is Emma Thompson's story. Emma Thompson is a queen. Her crying alone to both sides now is the thesis of this film. No matter you think you've found love, but it's actually just a call to the fact that you have no human connection. And this is the simile that you clutch onto in this time where everyone makes you feel even more isolated than you are. So you end up alone singing Joni Mitchell while your husband thinks that you're having I don't know, a tummy issue. I just believe that because I'm someone who watches it in July and my friend banned me from watching it, I'm not only allowed currently to watch it between Thanksgiving and December because I used to use it as my crying movie. I believe that it's not really about the spirit of Christmas, that love is all around you. It's more the fact that, like, we're all grasping for love, and at the end of the day, you're just at Heathrow hoping your husband isn't going to leave you for the lady who, like, shook her mistletoe at him at the holiday party.
I mean, it is.
There's a mistletoe in that movie?
Yeah.
Mm. I'll be waiting under mistletoe, waiting to get kissed.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I know I won't like it.
I mean, I do think it is probably the most.
I know. I just know in my
heart. It's the most successful romantic movie to start with a 9/11 reference, for sure. For sure.
I stand corrected. I will watch the beginning of the film.
Ooh, there's some wild rides in that movie.
All right, TMG, okay. Bring us home.
The hill that I will die on is holiday related, and
the improv we're doing right now. Can't wait.
I can't. Okay, I'm just gonna go for it. Anytime a town center or a city is responsible for decorating trees with lights, I would like to see every single branch lined with lights and not a lazy circle around the tree. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying?
That is so hard.
No.
You feel like the tax dollars are not being used properly.
I feel like the tax dollars are not being used properly. We rolled up to O'Hare Airport recently, and they have just loose strands of light bulbs.
But that's a great metaphor for
loose,
Chicago.
Loose. Yeah, they're not trying. They're like phoning it in, just wrapped around haphazardly, looking like shit. I want every single big branch to be spotlighted so that when you look at it.
Go for the small branches, too. No.
Do them all. When you look at the tree, you're like, wow, I see the shape of the tree. Not like, wow, that's like a messy cotton candy nonsense ugly thing. Mm-hmm. So the hill that I will die on is that I guess the folks who are not getting paid enough to do this should work harder.
Yeah, exactly. They want you to participate in capitalism.
Yeah.
You want that tree to shine.
I want the tree
honey.
To shine. Yeah. I want the tree to shine.
Okay. You're the Ebenezer Scrooge.
I'm the Ebenezer Scrooge.
To all the Bob Cratchits out there who decorate Christmas trees.
Put your back into it. I know it's cold out there and it's thankless work, but.
And it's like, and you could actually go to a mall and make that happen. We could get you a megaphone.
Yeah.
You could yell at the people while they do it.
Mm-hmm. Just respect the shape of the tree. That's all I'm saying.
Do you have a top hat to wear while you're yelling at the people? A top hat. We need a monocle.
Yeah.
We need all of the fixins of wealth, 19th century wealthy people. Okay. We did it. We came up with that. Wow. No Hanukkah hills. I'm sure we're going to get some in our inbox because there were no Hanukkah hills.
I think everyone here parties. And everyone here loves latkes, right?
Holy shit.
It's like a
the hill that we'll collectively die on is latkes are the jam.
Yeah, they are an amazing food.
They're amazing. Well, happy holidays to everybody.
Happy holidays. Thank you to
Tien, Kieran, and Riri for coming by and sitting at this lonely table with me. Thanks to Alyssa Mastromonaco for calling in. And there will be more hysteria next week. Hysteria is a product of Crooked Media. Caroline Reston is our producer. Our editor is Sarah Barrett, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer. Thank you to Juliet Beckstrand for production support and to our digital team, Elijah Cohn and Nadina Melkonian, for filming and editing our video content every week. Make me come straight from the bottle. I slurp this rum. I'ma get me some.